All right, Talking Travel, yes, is the name of the game. Sally Lucas here to take us through a whole lot, Sally, in a couple of different worlds today. Firstly, you'll be doing some tips to get us to Japan. But the other topic later on really interests me, some of the wild places to go.
Yes, and use your imagination of what you consider to be wild, but stay tuned and you'll find out.
All right, now you don't mean the place with the hottest discotheques, do you?
Nah, not really.
All right, just a while. We'll go into the wild and we'll head to Japan as well. Talking Travel. Sally, the one place that everybody seems to either be going to, or they're either at right now, or they have been to recently, is Japan. It has come very much in vogue. I know you've got some tips for us, but why Japan and why now?
Why Japan? That's a very good question. And a lot of the people that have gone to Japan, it wasn't even on their bucket list, but they might have seen a good deal and thought, oh, yeah, let's go to Japan. Maybe it'll have word of mouth too, as a lot of do with it. There has been a lot of advertising, but also because we're getting a better rate of the yen to the dollar, whereas years ago it was considered one of the most expensive countries to visit. Well, that's not the case anymore, so that helps.
A bit more economical. People can move it to the front of their list.
And, of course, it's got so much there, which is, you know, one of the reasons people go there, because it's everyone remembers the cities. Everyone's familiar with the names of the important cities, you know, Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, etc. But it's an archipelago of islands, and there's so much to see there. It's got everything from inland seas to beautiful forests and rainforest to pine forest, coastal, you know, so it has got something for everybody. Even it's not just the cities, even though we've got Tokyo with 37 million people, which is even hard for me to comprehend.
It's amazing, isn't it? That, I mean, more than Australia in one location.
Sure. I know. So it is hard to comprehend.
And there are some tips for us too.
But anyway, yeah, these are, like any country, it's not just Japan, but things you need to know about a country before you go there. And of course, it is a blend of ancient traditions in Japan. And even though they're very modern, they've got the futuristic skyscrapers and everything, they've still got a lot of really rich history and traditions that you should be aware of before you go, and protocols to take. So one is, if you're going to go to an onsen, which is a natural hot spring bath that's been heated geothermically underground, an incredible experience. And most of them are found obviously outside in tranquil nature, and also, but they have some indoor bathhouses as well now. The main thing is to be sure you wash before you enter the water. Don't put your head underwater. And if you've got long hair, you tie your hair up so it doesn't hang in the water.
Okay, I get the concept of trying to be clean before you go. What's the idea with the not putting the head under? A cleanliness thing or?
Don't know. I think you think about your orifices, nostrils, ears, mouth. You don't know, I suppose. That's just me saying that. I'm assuming it could be that.
Okay.
And hair, you could have a hair disorder, whether it be dandruff or whether it be psoriasis or eczema or...
Other than that, enjoy the show.
Enjoy it, yeah. Also, we always say with language, it's always handy to have a few local phrases up your sleeve before you go. And with all the apps you can get nowadays that'll help you out with that, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people love it when you have made that effort to at least be able to say hi, goodbye, you know, thank you, excuse me, cheers, please, you know.
And it makes for a bit of playful banter as well. You know,
it does.
Like they know what you're saying, but you don't quite get it right, and it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, it is. And if you're eating out, and of course, Japanese cuisine is again become the flavour of the month, even in Australia, you know, because it's so clean. It's such good, clean, fresh cuisine. I guess that's the beauty of it. And a lot of the Japanese people live a lot longer than we do because of that. But the main thing is, too, if you're going to use your chopsticks, don't use them to point at people.
Okay, that's a manners thing.
Yes, manners thing. And don't use them to pass food. You rest your chopstick down on your – and not next to your plate on your bowl. You must rest it on the rest. Rest your chopsticks on the little rest. And always clean your hands with the towel provider before you eat. And you wait until everyone has received their beverage before you have a sip. So once everyone's received their – Japanese tea or their sake or whatever it is they're having, you wait for everyone to have their drinks and then you can all have a cheers and a sip.
The concept of polite society really permeates everything about Japanese culture, is it? And
it does.
Imagine without these sort of tips, Sally, you could, not intentionally, you could just fall foul of what
this is why it's important to know. And the other thing too they consider particularly rude is you don't find many people in Japan who would eat while they're walking. So that's... They don't do that. You sit down to eat. You don't walk with your food. You might see someone having a drink or a snack, but not eating out of a box or, gotcha. You know what I mean, or eating a hamburger or something. And the other thing too, with your shoes too, I mean, you're obviously going to be doing quite a lot of walking, which you do anyway, so you want comfortable shoes. But when you visit traditional religious sites or even some restaurants, it's customary for you to remove your shoes and slip into some communal slippers sometimes. But you might want to wear socks if you like as well. So take your shoes off and, you know, just be aware of that. There are you know, lots of things like that that you've got to be aware of. So they're just a few of the things to let you know. And of course, there's some other things you can do to make it really interesting too. You can have a sand bath. There are places where you don your yukata or like Japanese robe and you're buried up to your neck in black volcanic sand. And the heat and the weight of the sand are said to cleanse your body and are highly valued as a beauty treatment. So there you go, ladies.
I'm going to take a punt that this is not the same consistency as regular sand. It sort of ends up everywhere and you have to have a real good shake to get rid of it. Am I on the right path here?
You probably are, Mark, okay. Yes. The other thing you can do is learn how the art of traditional sake has been developed to the modern day from the 18th century. So that's something else if you're interested in that. Of course, Mount Fuji, weather permitting again, it's often obscured by clouds, but if you go there, you know, the best times of the year, obviously spring for cherry blossoms, autumn for the autumn colours. They're the two really beautiful times of the year for all the colour you're going to see, which is either is as spectacular. To me, I like the autumn because you've got more colours. Cherry blossoms just got one colour everywhere, like we have when jacarandas are here. We say, oh, aren't they pretty, you know, but they're just, it's just the one colour. But autumn, you've got this beautiful array of goldens and russets and brown hues still amongst some green. It's just stunning. And we've just talked about a little bit about onsens, but even just they've got hot springs, a lot of hot springs everywhere, not just onsens, where you can go. It's famous throughout Japan for a lot of their hot springs. And of course, you've got to remember that a lot of people in Australia love going there to ski because it's not as far to fly it as to Europe or to America. It's cheaper now, much cheaper. A lot of the resorts are cheaper to stay at, fly out. I'm not a FIFO.
No, not quite.
So ski in, ski out. You knew what I was trying to say. But a lot of these lovely little villages, not even just the more important ones, there's some smaller villages and you can just stay in traditional accommodation, go to some Japanese cooking schools. So in the winter, you don't even have to go to ski. You could just go to enjoy the snow and the food and the ambience of the village you're in. And, of course, you've got the very famous fast trains that will take you everywhere around the Mount Island.
I saw a documentary on the TV a few weeks ago about that. Bullet train, how it all works. I mean, it's such an amazing thing.
It is. It is amazing.
And they're looking to update it. It's not fast enough, not quick enough for them.
I know.
They're looking to double the speed. to give you a bit of an idea, that'd be like getting on a train here and getting on the Gold Coast in like 40 minutes.
Yes, a bit like the Eurostar. It gets up to 300 k's an hour.
Mm.
So when you don't go up for the scenery, if you want to see your scenery on a train, you've got to take the slow train, you know, like the slow boat to China. But it's a slow train in Japan. The fast train will get you there quickly, but it's just going to be, and it's gone.
Our travel guide, Sally Lucas, is here. And some of the wild places. I'm sure there's no discotheque in there, Sally. You sure?
I'll have a quick look, but I can't see one.
Survey says no, huh? All right. Let's get into these wild places.
It's all about daytime wild, I guess, rather than nighttime wild.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, we've probably heard a lot lately with river cruises, of course, that a lot of these rivers do have some wild places on them as well, some of the more or the less explored. And one of them would be the Douro River in Portugal. And it's a UNESCO-listed area called the Alto Douro, and it's a haven for wildlife, rich variety of birds, eagles, black storks, kites, griffins even, and Egyptian vultures even can be seen soaring in the air there. So it's, again, you can go down these rivers and it's about, I think a river cruise is just so serene. You know, rough weather for a start, a limited amount of passengers, just very, very small ship cruising, beautiful food, wonderful scenery, and then some wildlife thrown in as well. You couldn't ask for much more than that, could you?
No, you really couldn't. And all of that with the unpack once.
And that's, I think, the real plus. So that's probably a little bit of a more upmarket, less wild place, should I say.
Well, we're gradually getting wilder.
Getting you into it, yes. Yeah. Now, according to legend, this particular rainforest called El Yunca, is a mighty mountain on top of a throne, of a mountaintop, what they call a mountaintop throne, which they consider protects Puerto Rico and its people. So the rainforest is considered one of the world's smallest, but it's also one of the most biologically diverse. And again, it's home to hundreds of animals and plant species that cannot be found anywhere else in the world. Even an endangered Puerto Rican parrot and a very, really tiny, tiny, tiny little tree frog called Koki. How cute's that, Koki? They've got the Ardèche, which is in France, and that is a very wild area of France, I can assure you. People, again, think of cities and they might think of little villages, but they forget a lot of these countries have got some quite stunning gorges and ravines, and that's what the Ardèche is like. It's got dramatic gorges, deep valleys, cascading waterfalls, all of that. Forests of chestnut trees, ancient houses made of stone, you know, beautiful views that everywhere you look, and it's the very south end of the Rhône Alps region, so near both northern Provence and the Languedoc. It's just a very inspiring part of France. In Norway, where the Norwegian and the Barents Seas meet, it's the cliffs of Nordkapp, or the North Cape, and they rise more than to 1,000 feet to a real rocky plateau. And from there you can see the remote port of Honningsvåg, which is just an incredible town which we visited on our Hurtigruten voyage.
There we go. We've got it in there today.
So they've got to be there for you. And it's just a breathtaking drive to the top of this North Cape or Nordkapp for the most spectacular views. Just a beautiful sight.
Can I just get the name of that town again? I love the name of that.
You want me to say it again, do you?
Please do, yep.
I don't know whether I can. Did I get it right the first time?
I don't know. I'm sure.
Honningsvåg.
Honningsvåg, okay.
Okay. Now, a little bit further south now, going to Croatia, you've got the Krka, I hope I'm saying that right, National Park. Now, it's famous. You've probably seen, our listeners probably have as well, it's a magical place of all these tiers of cascading low waterfalls. And you just see spectacular photos often on Instagram or Facebook or whatever you're looking at on your social media. It's a spectacular part of Croatia. And the National Park runs along the Adriatic Sea from the river Krka to the interior of Croatia. And that is quite a beautiful place for you to go if you're going into Croatia. It is stunning. And I suppose I'm going out for time now. Have I finished?
If you've got one more, we can do one more.
Can I do one more?
Please do.
All right. So one more. Now, I might do... which one will I do? How about this? The Wacker Valley. Now, this is in Germany. And it's all greens and golds and every colour of nature's palette. And beautiful stretches of landscape along the Danube River as well. And it's been described by UNESCO as a basically medieval landscape which has evolved organically and harmoniously over time. And both sides of this valley are just dotted with ruined castles, medieval towns, and lined with terraced vineyards. So something very special.
That just sounds amazing. You picked a good one to finish up with.
Good on me.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, there are some of the wild locations, and we'll continue with Sally with Talking Travel in a moment. The hot deals are next at 2NURFM. Sally, we've pretty much done it all the last little bit. We've got our Japanese etiquette sorted.
We have.
We've sorted out some of those wild places across the world. And now we'll see if we can save you a couple of bucks doing it.
Well, we'll try and do that, as we always do, Mark. And we're just giving you good value for money or a good deal. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Sounds good.
And if you get in early, as we always say, that's when you get a good deal. So the earlier, the better. I've got a few little Japan ones here today just to keep you, posted on those, which are quite interesting, depending on how much time you've got. Now, these are all going, for next year. And they run throughout the year, of course, all months of the year, but as I said to you before, the cherry blossom ones, everyone seems to want to do that more often than autumn. As I said to you, I think I'd like to go autumn because the autumn leaves last longer too. They don't, the cherry blossoms don't last as long and can be a bit fickle. If they've had a really long winter, the blossoms mightn't come out till later and you've booked earlier and you've missed out altogether.
Yeah, and by the time you get back home, after missing it, then all of a sudden there they are,
and you think, damn. Anyway, these are some good ones because they're all inclusive of your airfares, and I love those sort of packages because, like a cruise, you've paid for everything up front and you've only got that, little bit of spending money. Like most of your meals are included, all your sightseeing's included, your air travel, all your internal travel, and I think that's a really good way. You just know what you're up for up front. So this is a 12-day one that does a journey through Japan if you've only got a shorter amount of time. But you're still seeing quite a lot. You're getting up as far as Sapporo, which is great. You're getting down, obviously, to Nikko, Tokyo, Hakone, Mount Fuji, Kyoto, Osaka, all of the usual places as well. And that's a really lovely itinerary, as I said, that goes mostly all year round from sort of about March through. Some of them go to June for this year, and then they'll start up again next year as well. There's another 12-day one that does a different direction. It doesn't go up as far as the north, but it goes more to the south, down to Hiroshima, Miyajima. You know, so it depends what part of Japan you're interested in. Osaka, because as I said to you before, there's just so much to see. And again, that's all meals. All of these, by the way, I'm telling you, are all meals, airfare, sightseeing. So really, it's just a little bit of spending money is all you're up for.
Yeah, just for your trinkets.
Yep, just for your trinkets. And you don't want to take too many of those. But maybe a nice pearl or something. Oh, that'd be nice. Famous for their Mikimoto pearls.
True.
Aren't they? And there's another lovely 13-day one. But there are longer ones as well. Look, we have friends or neighbours behind us, and they're actually going for 6 weeks. They just felt they really wanted to do it in depth, because the more they read about Japan, the more they realised there was to see, and they wanted to do some of the other islands, not just the main island. So they're doing a combination of some tours, some independent travel, you know, airfares, and yeah, they're off for 6 weeks.
And that can be the thing, isn't it? You think, well, you can't do and see it all in a couple of weeks, regardless of where you're going. They're obviously going to put the time in to see a lot more of the things that they've researched that just really pique their interest.
And this is where I always say research is so important, no matter where you're planning to go. Like, the more research you put into your trip, the more you're going to get out of it. And if you're booking with your travel agent, it's letting them know what your interests are too, so they know how to plan it better for you and make it a seamless journey for you. So everything just goes to plan.
Well, that's it. I mean, you might say, we're into this, that and the other, and the travel agent go, well, actually, we've got a few things, a few suggestions here that you might not think of, and bam, you're off on a holiday.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, there, of course, we have all these Black Friday sales every year that we go down this trend of Black Friday. Anyway, Colette Tours, who have worldwide tours just about everywhere in the world, not absolutely everywhere, but most places, put it that way, you can save up to 25% off all a range of their tours. Now, that's a big discount. That's massive.
Yeah.
And they have this window of opportunity for you to travel from book up until the 4th of December for travel from 1 January to 30 April. 1 January 2025 to 30 April 2026.
See, that's almost good as a personal upgrade from the boss of an airline, isn't it?
Almost.
Almost.
Almost. And look, lastly but not leastly, Viking. I know they've been doing massive newspaper advertising promoting their Fly Free sale, and which is really fantastic. So through all their European tours, their river cruises, everything, they're offering Fly Free so long as you book by the 15th of November. They extended theirs. Nearly all the other early bird and deals finished at the end of October. Theirs is pushed through to the 15th of November, which is next Friday. So if you're still undecided and you want to get in to take advantage of that Fly Free sale, you've got till next Friday.
All right, there is plenty to see there and be a part of if you're looking to do a bit of travelling towards or locking in some travelling before the end of the year. Sally, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch you next week.
And I hope you're feeling a lot better, Mark.
I'm feeling all right. I just still sound terrible.
You just sound terrible.
I don't sound it, which is, I mean, what's the main thing I do? I've got to talk.
Well, you've got a deep baritone now. It might be sexy.
Yeah, well, as long as they don't have to look, they'll be fine. All right, thanks, Sally. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
That's Talking Travel done for the week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.